This episode comes with a trigger warning. We will be discussing drug use, psychedelics, religion, religious trauma, and dogmatic principles, and everything that entails. Please turn off the episode now if you cannot safely handle these topics. We'll see you next week.
Yes, great. I just sent you a little article that I wrote specifically about trauma within religion and kind of some of my understanding of how trauma works, if it's helpful. So the website I just sent you, that link, it's lifeafterdogma.org. Yeah, I don't think so. And my interest is in what's known as integral or transpersonal psychology. That's one of the main perspectives I work with.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the We and Me podcast. This is Erica with you today, and we are joined by Andrew Jasko, someone that we had come across on Twitter. For those of you who also know Shecky from the Sheck Check, you may have come across that episode on his show. And Andrew Jasko, for those who don't know, he is a religious trauma and spiritual development coach. He is also working on getting his degree in clinical psychology. And I will let him explain a little bit more about some of the other things that he's got his hand in, various cookie jars, if you will. So how's it going, Andrew?
I'm thrilled to be alive.
That is a positive thing, man.
I try.
Coming in strong with some positivity today.
Don't worry, we'll bring the other side, too.
Right, I'm sure. So just for some of our listeners, can you go a little bit more in depth about who you are and what it is that you do and your goals in that?
Sure. So I work with religious and spiritual leaders and people who have experienced psychological abuse from their experience in religion, and I help them to heal from the trauma caused by religious indoctrination and experience and to develop a healthy relationship to their teachings and ideologies and whatever spirituality looks like for them, whether they choose to be religious or spiritual or atheist, whatever that framework is, and wherever they are in that process. So I grew up the son of a minister in a Pentecostal Protestant Evangelical Assemblies of God church. A lot of different words there.
That's a whole lot of Jesus. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is a whole lot of Jesus. So Pentecostal Christianity is a radical fundamentalist version of Christianity. It emphasizes the Holy Spirit and the miraculous and an experiential relationship to spirituality. At the same time, it's loaded down with dogma and fear, a belief in the need to colonialize the world with religion, i.e. conversion and evangelism, and to obey God in every single aspect of one's life. So total obedience, total submission to God in thought and emotion and action. It's a very, very severe form of control. So I grew up raised in the system, and I wanted to be a missionary because at the end of the day, what matters most in this religious system is saving souls, because life is a test to see whether you're going to get the right answer on a divine quiz and end up in heaven or hell. So we had this imperative mission to go save the world for Jesus, and I was radically devoted to this. I considered my relationship to God to be absolutely everything, but it functioned very much like an abusive relationship, because God was my lover, and God also beat me with messages of violence like fear and sin and shame and hell, and it was this back and forth. I never knew which God was going to show up that moment. Was it going to be the God of love or the God of judgment and fear? And this is one of the major problems in these ideological systems that confuses people and entraps them and entangles them, is that there's this mixture of fear and love, and both are there. So I was growing up in the system. I went to Wheaton College, an evangelical school, to study evangelism and Bible.
In Illinois?
And that's right.
In Wheaton, Illinois.
Wheaton, Illinois. Yeah.
Small world. Go ahead. That's wild.
Yeah, along with Billy Graham, he went there as well, and mm-hmm. I've been to several of his crusades, his evangelistic meetings. So I studied there, and I took my first missionary trip to India. I fell in love with the country, decided I was going to be a missionary for life to India to convert Hindus and Muslims to Christianity. That was my goal, to help bring about the second coming of Jesus Christ through completing the Great Commission, world evangelism. And I went on to study for my Master of Divinity. That's a degree for professional clergy, chaplains, and missionaries at Princeton Theological Seminary in order to prepare to be a missionary. So I became a licensed minister and was ready to go, but I had a rude awakening. At the same time that I was radically devoted to this religion that I considered to be reality, to just be the way things were, I was also tormented and miserable by this message of fear, and I didn't know it. I had no idea why. I thought I had an anxiety disorder. I thought it was a psychiatric illness, and it looks just like that. And a lot of times, religious trauma and abuse manifests very much in the same ways that psychological disorders manifest in, because they operate on the same processes. So I was miserable, and I just made a commitment to myself. I said, I've got to get rid of this fear. I've just got to have a healthier, happier life. So I began to see that the Bible itself was the source of my psychological experience of torture and anxiety, that there were all kinds of toxic and damaging ideas in the religion itself. And I couldn't deny it. I tried harder to make the religion work. I went through this process of trying harder and pulling back, and slowly I came out over the period of a couple years, and eventually I ended up leaving the religion entirely, and it was a long, long process, but now I am studying for my doctorate in clinical psychology and helping people through the process and writing a lot about it.
That's really fantastic that you were able to kind of recognize those things. So now I have a question, though. Do you hold any religious belief in God, a higher power, something along those lines?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I feel like I relate to different systems, but I don't identify with any one of them. And people tend to be irritated with me in all of the systems, whether it's religious, spiritual, or atheist, because I enjoy the freedom not to define myself, honestly, and to be able to change my beliefs, because I've already done so several times, and I'm sure I will again. And to me, that's part of the lesson of spirituality and taking a non-dogmatic approach to life, is not identifying and not defining oneself by an ideology or a belief system, and cultivating openness and humility. But to answer your question, somewhere between atheism and spirituality, some kind of a mixture. I don't quite know how to define it.
Agnostic?
If anything,
you believe in the possibility?
No, I would say, see, I really value what people would call mystical or transpersonal experiences.
Sure.
I utilize practices like meditation, psychedelics, mm-hmm. and I have these kinds of mind-blowing encounters that a lot of atheists, not all of them, when I talk about them, tend to say, that's not real, it doesn't exist. And I can tell that these people are often just not having these encounters, or they haven't studied thousands of years of philosophical observation and careful study, often in Eastern or indigenous traditions, about these states of consciousness and these ways of relating. So, you know, I don't know. I try not to put a cosmology or a framework on them, although we all go there and I go there too. I try to value them and to be open to various interpretations. But I would say something like, maybe, like, if we want to use the symbol God, nature is God. Like, it's this kind of this living, breathing thing in a metaphorical or literal sense, and we're all connected to it. All life comes from it, And I really value honoring and preserving life and seeing our connectivity to the rest of the cosmos.
So in what way then would you, so you're talking about belief, right? My issue comes in with the word belief in general. I find that people use the word belief based on its definition as an excuse in some ways, because like you had said, that's what's interesting about you and the way you explained that, though, is that you're not doing that, because you freely and openly admit that your belief is spectrum in a way, and that you fully are aware that it changes based on your experiences, based on what it is that you continue to learn, your growth. There's a lot of similarity in that in regards to reincarnation, right? So with that sort of belief system and that structure, people who believe in reincarnation, I'm very much like boiling it down here and paraphrasing. However, within that belief structure, you're going to try and gain higher levels of consciousness throughout these different lives that you're given, either as a gift or as a punishment throughout these lives that you live. So in that, it's very spiritual. So for me, my question then comes into how do you define your spirituality a little bit further? Because what's the point of it if you can just kind of flip-flop it back and forth? What do you get out of it is my point.
Yeah. For me, spirituality, what I'm calling spirituality, has been the most profoundly healing part of my journey.
Right. Yeah. That's why I'm asking, because you don't have to, I don't care how people define their belief system in any way, provided that it's helping you. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. And it's given me a way to overcome trauma by stepping outside of the trauma cycle entirely and identifying something with something that's beyond trauma and that has a kind of a healing power. And one of the ways in which I access what you can call spiritual experiencing is sure. through psychedelics, breath work, and meditation, what we could call altered or non-ordinary states of consciousness. And these experiences tend to give me a subjective experience of connecting with something that you could call greater than yourself in a way, or at least having that kind of a psychological feeling of that. And that feeling, that subjective experience, is incredibly powerful. So let me give you an example.
Sure, please.
Jesus said in the Bible, love your neighbor as yourself, mm-hmm. and love your enemies. And I think that's really valuable wisdom. Like, I want to do that, but how do I actually achieve that? Well, one of the ways to do that is experiential, whether you're an atheist, materialist, religious, whatever. The power of the experience, many people attest, can be life-transforming. So in these altered states, I often have these experiences of, people will say, oneness, like a complete sense of timeless unity with all of reality, being outside of symbolic, linguistic, ego-bound experiencing. And this is described in Eastern traditions as non-duality. And right. it's a real subjective experience.
Right, yeah, and I'm familiar with non-duality.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be incredibly powerful, because having this experience of being connected with other people where the boundaries dissolve and I can experience, say, a tree or rocks or the planet or another person as part of myself, mm-hmm. this kind of emerging and love becomes a natural outcome. It's something that I experience, and it becomes hard to destroy. It becomes hard to hate what I see as a part of me and what I experience as a part of me. So that experiential subjective component of kind of going beyond the individual self and connecting to some kind of a deeper core or essence, however we view that cosmologically, I think is very, very valuable. It has been for me.
That's good that you're gaining a positive experience from it. So I wanted to ask about, you had mentioned earlier that atheists religious people or non-religious people. I'm just going to define it in those simple terms because there's endless ways to define religion. So it's kind of like a two-parter here. First, what do you see the difference being in religion or a religious experience and a spiritual experience? How do you see those differently?
A lot of this depends on definition.
Sure.
So I think we can use the term religion in a positive or a negative way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's used in the different ways. For me, what's problematic is dogmatic religion, where it takes a certain belief and it says, this is divine revelation. You can't question it. You have to simply believe and accept it.
Right.
And that's dangerous. And dogma can be dangerous pretty much wherever we encounter it, because it can't be questioned.
Sure.
And so religious or spiritual experience, or whatever it is, for that matter, rational or empirical claim, can be questioned.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. Bear with me for a second. You know, I'm with you. The dogmatic belief, that's an issue, because that is the non-questionable belief. It's like a structure of things that are laid out in front of you, and this is what you're given, and this is it. This is the answer, the full truth, 100%. This is what it is. If not, get out. Or if not, you're wrong. Or if not, you're punished. Or the et cetera's therein. But how do you see that differently from spirituality? Like, do you go into... I'm asking because if you go into... Do you have any prerequisites, in a manner of speaking? Or do you have any, like, things that you pull from previous experiences that draw you back to spirituality? Like, okay, so this is what I hope to experience this time in my meditation, or et cetera.
Yeah, believe it or not at all. When I left religion, I was completely turned off by the word spirituality. I was triggered every time anyone mentioned it.
Sure.
I was just so annoyed by the people I lived around in California talking about their crystal balls and astrology and reincarnation, mm-hmm. all these ideas. And
sure.
I just went into a form of atheism that just shut down the conversation anytime anyone talked about it and said, you're all superstitious, you're idiots, you don't know anything.
See,
that was what
that,
I did. That's not
that,
what everyone does.
That's the
that's
difference for me. Yeah, that's not atheism. If you're angry.
That's what I did, though.
Yeah.
But that's commonplace. I interact with that all the time. So I'm not saying it's atheism, but I'm saying it's very common. And I understand why. I think it comes often out of trauma and triggering.
Absolutely.
And reacting.
Yeah, very reactive. Yeah.
So I guess when I started taking psychedelics and doing meditation, just my mind was blown continually by the healing power of these experiences that I had no framework for. So I was forced to do my research and to talk to people who were actually having these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered was that a lot of indigenous and Eastern psychologies and religious traditions had a very advanced, developed framework for understanding these traditions. Now, it was often mixed up with religion, but they often didn't separate the two. And there's a lot of sophisticated, rational thought that went into that. And I just tended to dismiss it all as being like religion or Christianity. But my discovery was that it was very different in many ways, that it was based on contemplation and experiencing, whereas within my religious framework, I didn't have these spiritual experiences. I had emotional rushes. I had questionable, faint mental images. I always questioned, was this the preacher influencing
yeah.
me?
Yeah.
But these were just like unquestionable and reproducible and just happening to me, whether I believed or not. They just happen, and they're just mind-blowingly, subjectively real on a psychological, subjective plane. So there's a way that certain yogic philosophy differentiates, and these are just categories. I don't even know quite what I think about them yet, but it's interesting to consider.
Sure.
These different realms called the gross, the subtle, and the causal.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, the gross, they refer to, these aren't precise definitions, but the gross is kind of material, the subtle as like mental and abstraction, or rational, which is not empirical, not measured by the senses, but in the realm of thought and abstraction. and then the causal, which is kind of this mystical experiencing realm of contemplation, where you have these experiences of non-duality or timelessness, things like that, which you can't quite measure. And so people talk about category errors when you're trying to talk about those from a purely empirical or rational perspective. You're very limited in what you can say. It's kind of like saying, hey, are you familiar with Mozart? What do you think of him?
Right.
And someone answers, well, I've read the musical score. I thought it was excellent work. It's like, if you don't know Mozart, you might have like a scientific understanding, but until you've heard Mozart, right. You know, so this is kind of what I'm talking about in this differentiation.
Sure. So yeah, like the experience versus the intellect of it. So like you read about something versus experiencing it, because in what you were talking about with the quote unquote religious experience that people crave because people want to be closer to God, or people want to be accepted into the group, or they want to be just make their parent or preacher proud, or however you want to define that. So when you work with these types of meditation or these psychedelics, what has been beneficial? What do you experience in regard to the psychedelic drug, for example, that you've talked about using to induce these experiences? What was it that was positive in that for you? Like, what did you get out of it, other than the hallucination, the release of serotonin?
Sure. Pretty much every time I go into these experiences, I get a revelation on the source of my suffering, especially on the roots of trauma. So usually I come in with a question. People use the word intention. Say, I want to explore my anxiety. Why am I anxious? Or I want to resolve the stuckness I'm having with my writing, enhance my creativity. And I tend to find that my experience will match the question, and I'll have all kinds of insights. For instance, learning about my fear of death, why I had it. I largely overcame a chronic fear of death, chronic anxiety and phobias through experiences on psychedelics. And so I'll have these breakthroughs in my psychological health and healing through doing this deep internal work of actually kind of taking a microscope into the trauma and seeing what's behind it, and then having an experience that helps to resolve it. And I balance that by taking those experiences into therapy and unpacking them and integrating them. And meditation has transformed my mind probably more than anything else. What it's done for me is allow me to slow down my thoughts enough and to quiet what's known as a narrative self, or in psychology, they call it the superego. And I also call it in religion the voice of God in one respect. So religion, or Christianity in its fundamentalist form, can create this massive superego, because God is presented as this judge who's searching your thoughts, always watching you if you commit a sin, mm-hmm. or if you think a sexual thought or have this unsanctioned feeling, ready to punish and judge you. And you internalize these voices you hear from your parents, from society, or from God. And it becomes this massive inner critic, this source of shame and self-abuse and low self-esteem and self-hatred that so many people in our society struggle with, probably almost everyone, honestly.
If you experience some of the more constricting religions especially through your developmental years, like, you know, birth to 10 or something like that, and then you start to quote unquote rebel against it when you're in your middle school years, or, you know, like the junior high going into high school and stuff like that. That's just generally where development that like pushback begins to occur. So I just think it's interesting. You use these psychedelic experiences and, you know, the like serotonin receptors and all of these different things to move through some of your trauma in that, but you do still, you mentioned therapy. So just to be clear for everybody listening, you're not talking about going out and just taking a bunch of drugs willy-nilly. You're talking about making it a process and making it work for your life.
That's right. So psychedelic substances have been used for thousands of years, and in indigenous cultures around the world, they've been honored and revered as quote-unquote sacred by holding them within traditional ceremonial contexts. So they hold them as sacred, they respect them, and they take them with a structure, generally with other people around and within certain confines, kind of honoring that experience and that process and respecting that as well. So I don't just recommend going out and just taking it and having no clue. Like, definitely read up about it, take it in a safe manner, take it with a sitter or a guide, and integrate it, use it to integrate and to face your experiences and to grow, because that's the beauty of it. I mean, why waste it? So absolutely, I highly recommend doing your research, being safe about it. But if I can finish a point about that narrative self,
yeah,
this voice that's running in our heads that often is the cause of chronic anxiety or obsession or all kinds of things, this which can be the voice of God, this kind of a thought police, this inner judge that mm-hmm. we can have. What's been discovered through research, there's a book called The Finders by Jeffrey Martin I recommend. He studied people in religious traditions, especially in the more contemplative ones, who've managed to, through meditation and other means, or sometimes randomly, have this voice quieted often entirely and enter these different kind of long-term states of consciousness. And what's been discovered is it's almost unnecessary to have this voice. So through meditation, I've managed to slow down my thoughts, to not live in this constant dream state where I'm being driven by thoughts and emotions and behaviors and suffering that I'm not even aware of. So it's very, very powerful for healing.
My next question then, just because of what you just said, is what drives you then? What drives you forward?
Yeah,
what makes you want to get your degree? What makes you want to continue these teachings and practices and meditations?
So I haven't entered that deeply into my practice. What people who have entered more deeply into it tend to say is that with this kind of narrative voice quieter, they're able to enter more fully in, and their ambition doesn't necessarily decrease. I think it can, but they're kind of more in this flow state of not being caught in thinking, in thought cycling, but being able to enter more fully into action. So it's not that you can't think, it's that you're able to think more consciously and clearly rather than this kind of a chaotic thought cycling.
Right. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I meant for you. If your goal is to get deeper into your own self, or deeper into your own consciousness and try and get some of these, because from my understanding, what you're talking about is then trying to get some of that self-doubt talk out of your mind. So like some of those deep anxieties, those cycles that people often get stuck in. But if you're also saying that, I mean, the end goal, in a manner of speaking, is to get so deeply in that you lose some of these chaotic thoughts in this egotistical drive, then why bother?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's how I'd phrase it or not.
How would you phrase it?
This is kind of where my experience falls short,
okay. Honestly. No,
I know
fine.
what I'm reading about it, mm-hmm. and I know I've met a lot of people who seem to thrive without much of a voice in their head and with more or less almost an empty mind. But then I think it's also possible to go so deeply into this where you do kind of lose this ambition, but
and
that's like really, really deep years and years and years of practice, intentional cultivation and choice. So I wouldn't really be afraid of that happening, you know, if you're just looking to do meditation and some healing work.
No, I don't. Yeah, I'm not talking about fear. I'm asking you personally, is that what your goal would be then?
No, my goal is not to eliminate my desire or ambition at all. My goal is not to be stuck in or bound up or identified with my thinking or ambition. I want to be able to see it, to zoom out kind of as if from an outside perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I'm able to really make more conscious choices.
That's what I was wondering too. I was wondering if you were going to use that terminology, zoom out. in a way, mm-hmm. and more conscious choices, because that's largely how I experience the world, is in a very, it's a dissociative state, right? So you can kind of pull yourself from what's occurring and see it, absorb it, and then make the conscious appropriate choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to dissociation. That's why I was wondering if you were going to define it that way.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's just interesting. That's all. I was just wondering if that's the way you would have had explained it, and you did, so it was just curious to me. That's all.
It is very interesting.
Because that's largely how I do experience the world, and that's based in trauma. With trauma disorders, right? Even PTSD, people will get pulled into alternate states of reality. Horrific ones. And people with dissociative disorders, DID, dissociative amnesia, dissociative fugue, depersonalization, derealization. But the goal then therein is to work to pull themselves back into their body, not to meditate away from it. So it's this like push and pull of reality that was just interesting to me, and the contradictions of both sides of that.
It is very interesting, and sometimes there is overlap. So there's a lot of research on that too. Is kind of like some of the overlap or between psychotic states and some different states of consciousness. However, there might also be subtle differences. I found that meditation for me personally tends to ground me more in my body and help me with embodiment.
Absolutely, yeah, that's the goal of meditation. But I'm talking about the differences when you're talking about meditation and then the goals of some of these different spiritualities that you're talking about, and then entering in and adding psychedelic drugs to it, because then mm-hmm. you're stripping your humanity in a way, or altering it in a drastic way via serotonin.
Yeah, that's right. It is very fascinating, and I'm pretty new at the research.
Okay, yeah, that's fine then. Some of these different things that you're talking about, though, like some of the research and some of these different articles that you mentioned, you'll have to send them to me so I can link them below, because I definitely want to read them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So just make sure that you send it to me after the call, because I don't want to forget to mention that.
Sure.
So we're coming to the end of the episode here. Can you just let some of our listeners know a little bit about what you have coming up in the future, where they can find you on social media, and then your website? And then everybody listening, don't forget, you'll be able to find all this information in the description box below.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a blog called lifeafterdogma.org, and I write tons and tons of articles specifically about specific issues and how they damage people psychologically. And so, for instance, how trauma itself is embedded within certain aspects of a Judeo-Christian framework, and how that impacts people, or how religions can thrive on creating a sense of chronic unsafety. I provide coaching to help people heal from religious trauma, and I also work with spiritual and religious leaders to take a look at their teachings and practices and to find a psychologically healthy, more inclusive, expansive way, and to have some of these so-called spiritual experiences that I think can be so powerful, and that we see through science and research can help heal trauma, drug abuse, addiction, and help people connect with themselves and nature, all kinds of fascinating things. So that's what I'm doing. You can find me, Andrew Jasko, on social media. Email me, lifeafterdogma@gmail.com.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that with everybody. Everyone, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to Andrew for coming on. Like he said, you can find him at Life After Dogma. I'm going to put all those links down below. And then just a quick disclaimer, I am not advocating for people to go out and do drugs. If you are over the age of 18, you are very, very much aware of what is legal and what is not legal in your area, just to be clear. All right, everyone, thanks for listening, and thanks again to Andrew. We'll see you guys later. Bye. Oh, oh,